Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
So Johnson and Hamler far side, Freiermuth right behind Bowers, Sanders to the left, third and goal. It's Sanders right side, walks into the end zone, touchdown Penn State. The Nittany Lions take the opening drive and score. Stevens back to pass, Stevens throws down the near side, Freiermuth at the five, he's got it, touchdown Penn State. Tommy Stevens comes home to Indiana and throws a touchdown pass. Basie snaps it, put down by Gilligan, kicked by Pittiger's up, and the kick by Jake Pittiger is good, and the Nittany Lions take the lead. Ramsey gives it to Walker up the middle, fumbles the football, Penn State recovers, Garrett Taylor on top of it at the 23-yard line. Snap on the money, put down, kick by Jake Pittiger's up, the kick by Jake Pittiger is good, and Penn State expands its lead to 20-14 as the Nittany Lions, after the takeaway by Garrett Taylor, come down and get three. They have 36 points off a takeaway this year. They're rolling left. McSorley, he'll keep it and go to the five. Touchdown, Penn State! And the Nittany Lions take one play to take the lead. Drives out a low line drive, hits on the turf of the 30. Harris takes it 25, swings it far side. Harris breaks a tackle, 35. Fumbles the football! And Nick Scott's down, and Penn State recovers. Nick Scott did recover the fumble. He'll keep it to his left in trouble to the five. Goal line touchdown because he made a brilliant move at the five-yard line to get in. And the Nittany Lions have that coveted two-score lead. Ramsey empty backfield, two near side, trips far side. Ramsey goes back. Ramsey with time delivers over the middle off the hands of Timmy and intercepted Nick Scott. And Scott goes down at his own 37-yard line. Nick Scott's first career interception. And the Nittany Lions with a 33-21 lead with 4:35 to go.
Well, he had Timian who went off his hand. The ball's a little bit high, but catchable ball. Scott was right there on the deflection on fourth down to get the interception and go down.
Game is over. Nittany Lions win it 33-28. You and I said when we got on the bus, well, actually, we said on the phone this week, look, they just got the thing out, win by one. And
exactly.
They win by five.
Well, I didn't realize that, frankly, they called a timeout on that onside kick when Polk ended up making that easy recovery, which I thought the game was over.
Well, they didn't signal it. Let's start with that. They didn't tell anybody they called timeout. That's why. But look, the bottom line is Penn State's 5-2.
In a day that the win was unbelievable. I don't know if I've ever played in a game with that type of win. Obviously, the special teams turnover was really big. That was the other thing we talked about. That returner had hurt a lot of people. We've done a pretty good job on special teams when we've identified guys that could hurt you as punt returners or kick returners, and that showed up again today. So that was very, very important.
James, were you surprised that Indiana was able to run the football for 224 yards today?
Yeah, I was. You know, we tried to make some adjustments on the sideline. They were being really physical with their split zone. The back is 240 pounds, and they were able to fall forward and stay on schedule. So obviously, we got to get that cleaned up. But you know, again, you know, we found a way to get a win. You know, every time you thought the game was put away, they battled back. You got to give them credit.
You know, on your rotation defensively, you put a lot of people, Shaka Tony, fresh at the end of the game because Indiana ran 100 plays against your defense.
Well, it definitely was a next man up mentality. We had a bunch of guys. I don't, you know, in my 5 years since I've been here, I don't know if we've had that many guys go out in a game for a lot of different reasons. So it was a real positive next man up mentality. Had a bunch of different guys able to go in the game on both offense and defense and special teams and get the job done. And then obviously, you know, when you're able to get them into a throwing situation, there late in the game, you got to be able to take advantage of it with sacks.
And obviously, you try to build a culture, James, along the way where you try to outlast adversity, you try to show resiliency. Were those characteristics on display today?
I think definitely. That, you know, that showed up. And, you know, I think the other thing that's special is when you see a guy like Jonathan Thomas, who's been unbelievable here as a teammate, just a great teammate. Every way you could possibly explain it. And for him to get an opportunity tonight, get his hands on the ball, and he goes 94 94 yards kickoff return. It was slow motion, but it went 94 yards.
I just think the officials didn't have a sense for the dramatic and called him out of bounds.
Yeah, and we talked about that. We didn't think he had gone out, but it, right. You know, we were able to score the next play with Trace anyway.
I mean, it wasn't James Harrison slow. Okay, which is the slowest play I've ever seen in the history of the NFL.
Look good from my view, though. Same as you. Look good from
the James Harrison play is the single slowest play in football I've ever seen. That was 100 yards. This was 94 yards. And when he hit the 20 and he moved to the right, I thought, my goodness, he might go a long way here. It's like, I just feel awful he didn't give get the touchdown.
I did too, but I was laughing not at him while he was heading toward the end zone. I was laughing. It's like, man, that, like he says, the one person we probably did not expect that would score at that point in the game. But
what do you think about Indiana? Indiana's sitting there saying, all right, we kicked it away from Hamler. All right. Oh, jeez, you've got to be kidding me. That was, for Indiana, all right, we don't want Hamler to handle it. Oh, perfect. Oh, no. I mean, we don't have control over this. Look, Indiana ran the ball far too effectively against Penn State. There's no question about that. Ran the ball far better than I thought they would run the ball against Penn State. So that's one right away in the game. I thought Penn State did, first of all, offensively, again, too many drops, which is just, it's derailing everything. The drops are derailing everything. It's derailing emotion. It can derail momentum, and it also derails, you know, instead of being, okay, it's a first down, boom, I throw it, I get 15 yards, move the chains. Oh, it's second and 10, and you're 15 yards further back. So the drops are hurting because when they catch the ball, they're making plays. Freiermuth's been dependable, making plays. Hamler's been dependable, making plays. You can see when Juwan Johnson's out there, makes a play like that, took it 59 yards. The 59 yards, 44 were after the catch.
Yeah, that was a key halfway through the second quarter. That was a very pivotal point in the first half.
So he makes that catch, and you can see that when they do that, what it means to the offense. It's a big chunk play that they were able to get out of that. Sanders continues to be really good. You know, Sanders, I mean, he, for the most part, Miles Sanders runs downhill. They got him involved in the pass game, which we talked about last week. They needed to get him involved in the pass game. They did. He had a career-high 53 yards in receiving. But for the offense, the primary deal is, okay, somehow getting more consistency out of the wideouts. Now, the two of the kids played this week, Daniel George, and you saw Jahan Dotson made his first career catch. They still have, if the coaching staff wishes, two more games available to them as a limit if you want to redshirt them and then play them next year as redshirt freshmen. That's a decision they have to take, obviously have to take a look at. It's going to depend in part on how the injury situation plays out at the wideout spot. Trace McSorley gets sacked three times. You don't want to see Trace McSorley get sacked three times. Right, so the protection's got to be a little bit better. Against the defensive front, I thought was okay. Iowa's defensive front is, if you think Indiana's defensive front's a 6 out of 10, the Iowa defensive front's an 8 out of 10. They're really good. Defensively gave up too many yards rushing to a team that really doesn't run the ball all that well. For the most part, in the pass game, I thought they handled the pass game really well, to be honest with you. Micah Parsons played his best game. Cam Brown is now stringing together a series of really good games. Shaka Toney as a pass rusher was absolutely outstanding. I thought Windsor played really well. I thought Amani Oyewariye and John Reed played well. And Nick Scott, yeah, on the onside kick, that problem. But he had the fumble recovery, and he had the interception. The officials on Saturday, I'll say this. On the fumble recovery by Nick Scott, the official signal was Indiana ball. And then they got botched up and they had to change it. And they never announced anybody on the onside kick that a timeout had been called. Never. Like, okay. Interesting way to go about it. Now, I want to get to the targeting part. I'm going to use the Garrett Taylor play as an example because it's the one that would be freshest to Penn State fans, okay? So we look at the play. It is not called targeting on the field. But when Jack and I are glancing over at the replay, we see the helmet-to-helmet on the replay. And the two of us did say, hey, they're probably going to look at this, which you have the option of looking at in the box. So we both said right away, they may want to look at this. So they're looking at it, and we both agree that under the rule, the way the things that everything is under the rule, there's helmet-to-helmet contact, and we wouldn't be surprised if there's targeting, to which I then explain to the audience that if it is called targeting, remember, he would also have to sit out the first half of the Iowa game. So you want to just calmly go about and explain to everybody what the circumstances are. That way, when it happens, you know what the circumstances are moving forward with it. Well, it turned out they did call targeting, and because they did, Garrett Taylor, who on a scale of 1 to 10 would be one of those guys that would be a 1 that you would put into the potential targeting category, but he's out of the game. That also means he will not be able to play the first half of the game Saturday here at Beaver Stadium with Iowa. I've been thinking about the targeting thing anyway because I think, didn't it come up? I came up last week, right? And I said something about it, nobody knows what targeting is. Right? Well, this is one of those plays. And the Garrett Taylor play, again, this is as an example, but I think it's something that I would like to see conferences visit. I think you need to have the head of the league officials, and in this case it's Bill Corollo, and I think you know how much I respect Bill Corollo, Sean. I like and respect Bill Corollo a lot, as a matter of fact. I think if he sits down with a couple of experienced hands that have been around the block, know what's going on, and talk to on a Sunday and take all the targeting calls that weekend. Could be 2, could be 8, all right? And I understand why they're doing this for the safety of the game, and I understand that. But I think there's a big difference between launching yourself into somebody and doing what, for example, what Garrett Taylor did. Garrett Taylor is low, okay? So he's trying to tackle into the target zone. There's a target zone, waist to shoulders, that he's trying to target. Okay? Well, it turned out that Michael Penix, and I think part of it is a combination of Penix being hit down low, and then he getting into what I refer to as the tuck or the fetal position, going down to the ground. He then lowers his helmet into the tackling zone, and that's where the helmet-to-helmet contact occurs. Now, should it be penalized? Well, it's helmet-to-helmet contact, so yeah, okay. I understand that, so it's a 15-yard penalty. Because, again, safety is paramount. You're trying to make the game as safe as possible. Throwing him out for the rest of the game? Okay, that's what the ruling is at that particular time. But I think at that point, it needs to go to the conference office for them to take a long, hard look at all of these and say, you know what? Yeah, it happened. Yeah, there was a penalty. Yeah, you got thrown out for the rest of the game. That should be penalty enough. Because it is inadvertent, so on Sunday you inform both the school and the opponent that school is playing that week that, in this case, number 17 will be eligible to play the entire game. Or they sit there on a Sunday and they look at it and they say, you know what, we're going to stick by everything that was called. He's going to have to miss the first half. But I think they need to do that to at least ferret out some calls that are bizarre. Because I've seen targeting called, and I've made this example so many times. It was a Nebraska-USC game, and the linebacker for Nebraska made a high tackle up by the shoulder pads, but his helmet never touches the other helmet. He got called for targeting, got tossed. I think it would. This is not the guy. That's not the intent of the rule. I think, now, in this case, there's no second half involving it, you know, because it was a bowl game. And then the player was a senior, so it wouldn't carry over. But I think you've got to be able to throw some common sense in there where there is no way on the planet in this particular case, that a Garrett Taylor is targeting. I mean, I can even argue that in the Ohio State-Penn State game, the hit that is put on K.J. Hamler, yeah, it knocked Hamler out of the game. But I didn't feel like that was, that player, I can't remember the player who did it, but had to sit out the first half of the next week's game. I mean, that'd be one I'd take a long, hard look at because Hamler's kind of falling into him. So I'd like to see an additional layer put in instead of the automatic, it happened in the second half, so you've got to sit out the first half of next week's game. I mean, whatever happens, happens. They're going to have to play without this week. I mean, but I'm saying they've got to put more common sense and more thought into extending the punishment into another game because you have the video capability of looking at it. Just a thought. Now, you may have a disagreement on it. Just say automatic's good and it's right. I've never been enamored with that part when I thought it was inadvertent. Because there's too many times where the ball carrier or the quarterback or the wide receiver gets in a spot and then they tuck themselves into a lower position because they're trying, and not because they're trying to draw a targeting foul, they're doing it to get themselves in a position because they know they're going to get hit. Okay? But then they inadvertently then put their helmet into the target zone. Just a thought. We'll talk more about it in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com and News Radio 1070 WKOK. For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you. All right, the Dallas Cowboys, in desperate need of wide receiver help, have acquired Amari Cooper from the Raiders in exchange for a first-round pick. Okay. So that's a big move. Joe Sousa next half hour. Tim Neverett, the voice of the Red Sox at 4:06. Ben Jones, StayCollege.com. That time of the year, my man. Great to be with Sean. Great to be with all of you. The Michigan game, by the way, is going to be a 3:45 kickoff and a 2 o'clock airtime. So it's going to be 3:45, but 2 o'clock for the airtime. I think we can fill the extra 15 minutes. I think we're all right.
More Steve and Jack for us. That's a bonus.
No, I'll make Roger do it.
Put a GoPro camera on him, too.
Forget trick or treat. Sunbury Motors Ford is giving you all treats because they have to sell 7 new Fords every day now through Halloween. That's right. Now through Halloween, they're doing what it takes to sell 7 new Fords every day. Just listen. Ford Escapes from under 20 grand. SMC has 53 2018 Escapes from 19,320. Choose from over 61 2018 F-150 trucks starting at $25,969.
They've sold over 40,000 Ford trucks over the past 103 years.
And needs to sell 7 Fords every day, now through Halloween. Buy a 2018 Ford Explorer, starting at $31,705. SMC has 22 to choose from. There's also 13 2018 Ford Edges from $25,390. SMC is making it easier than ever because they need to sell 7 new Fords every day, now through Halloween. Sunbury Motors Ford, in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
right, great to have you with us on the show today, brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdy's, of course, have served this valley for decades. They always try to find you the best price and make sure you are absolutely covered. And that's the goal of Purdy Insurance. And if there's ever a question or a problem, guess what? They jump right in. They take care of it as if it happened to them. That's what I want from my insurance agent. That's what you should want, too. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Joe Susan, in a couple minutes here, right, Sean?
We're hoping. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tim Neverett, the voice of the Red Sox, on the World Series at 4:06. Ben Jones, statecollege.com at 4:35. Tomorrow, author Jeff Perlman, Football for a Buck. The crazy rise and crazier demise of the USFL. Yes, I read the book over the weekend. And Bob Nightingale of USA Today and Bob Buhner will be with us on Wednesday as well. So we have a lot going on the show this week. I talked about Penn State. Look, gave up too many yards rushing, too many rushing yards on Saturday against Indiana, a team that running-wise I thought was good, not great. But they still ran the ball for 224 yards. That's too many, especially an Indiana team that was averaging 150 per game rushing. Obviously they tried to make an adjustment on that. Like Yetur Gross-Matos, I didn't mention him. I thought he played one of his better games. Shaka Tony had 4 sacks. He played really well. Micah Parsons, that's his best game. And that's what you want to see now, that upward trend. The next thing I want to see with Parsons will be the ability to start making plays behind the line of scrimmage. Everything comes in stages, but I think that's the next stage for him, will be the ability to make plays behind the line of scrimmage. Get those all-important TFLs. Normally, if you're around 13 to 15% negative plays in a game or for the season, that's not bad. Penn State's right about the 13% mark on negative plays created by the defense this season. So they're right around what you want. You'd like to see it get closer to 15%. Now you're really doing something defensively. But they get 3 takeaways in the game, the 2 fumble recoveries, 1 by Taylor, 1 by Nick Scott, and then the Nick Scott interception. They were able to get 9 points off those takeaways. Remember, the 1 touchdown, the extra point was blocked. And I thought Scott played really well. I thought before he went out, Taylor was playing well, pretty well. I thought, you know, in fact, the secondary, I thought overall was playing decently. They were put in a couple of bad spots, especially at the end of the first half. They weathered it. And then, you know, it bothers me on the jump defensively at the end, because they hadn't jumped all day. Now they jump. They give them a free play. Well, people think, you know, sometimes they see guys move and they think that it's a false start, so everybody stops. And it wasn't a false start. And Indiana played through and they got the touchdowns. I mean, giving that one up. Offensively, I thought McSorley played really well. Again, you can't have the number of drops. You just can't. It just derails everything. Especially when you've got some rhythm building and going. Your tight end's giving you a lot. You've got Hamler giving you a lot. Sanders is giving you a lot. All right. And McSorley, I thought Trace did what he could. Special teams-wise, Blake Gillen's got to punt the ball better. Pinniger at least hit 2 field goals. So he's hit 3 of his last 4. And obviously Hamler. And then there's Jonathan Thomas. 94-yard. On the checklist of things you expected to see on Saturday, Jonathan Thomas returning a kickoff 94 yards to set up a touchdown was not on that checklist. And if you could handpick anybody in that group, and say, wow, you'd love to see that guy be a difference maker in the game, Jonathan Thomas would be one of those guys. He's an awesome guy. And has been a great teammate for these guys. So, What questions do you have along the way? I mean, I know there are a lot of people that there were some people that were negative about the game. All right, you want to see more, you want to see blowouts. I got that. And then there are also some people that, let's be honest about it, they wanted to see more because maybe, they happen to be one of those individuals that put a little cash in the game and Penn State didn't cover. I got that. That always is going to create a different emotion. I talked to my class about that this morning, as a matter of fact. I said, you got to be realistic in these particular days. If you're doing shows and you're getting emails or you're taking callers as to how upset some people get, because you've got to realize this is now a component that's going to create more of that. And I gave them the example, two examples. I gave them a game in 1985, I think it was. Penn State was playing Temple and got to the three-yard line with a two-point lead, and the spread was 7, and Penn State took three knees, and the stadium booed. I'm like, really? What are people upset about? They're going to win the game. See, and that's how naive I was. That was me being naive. And then in 2008, Jack and I were doing a game, and I can't remember what the spread was, 18 or something like that. Penn State drove downfield, boom, had to settle for a field goal that made it 17. And there was a smattering of boos. We went to a commercial break, and Captain Naive again, I looked over at Jack, and I said, they're beating Michigan by 17 points. What are they booing about? He said, Steve, the line's 18. I went, oh. Now, the payoff was they then threw a screen pass to Stephon Green. He took an 80 yards for a touchdown. And Penn State covered. But going forward, when it comes to the reaction of a small segment of fans, you do have to take into account that there is a small segment out there, which might be even a bigger segment, that if they don't get a payback, are going to be angrier. And that's why I've told my class, for example, and I've been very specific with my class about this. I said, I've told them, as people who cover games, never place a wager in the game you're covering. And the reason I've told them is this, is if you win money, you're going to be far more euphoric in your evaluation and not as realistic because it paid off for you. Conversely, you're going to be far more negative in your evaluation if it didn't pay off for you, and neither one is realistic. I mean, I said, you can do whatever you want. I said, I'm just advising from this point of view. Joe, Susan joins us. Hello, Joe. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much.
I heard you got wind burned out there in Indiana.
At one point in the postgame show, a house went by.
Ruby slippers?
Yeah, ruby slippers and a broom. But it was... you've been in... To me, of all the conditions, Joe, and you can speak to this... I've always felt that it's not snow, it's not rain. I've always felt that wind was a big factor for teams to deal with. How do you feel about that?
I agree with that. You get chances to practice in rain. If you're lucky, you get a chance to play in the snow. But you don't want to play in the wind because it has a significant impact on two of the quarters in someone's favor. And two of the quarters when it's coming in your face. And it impacts your passing game regardless of whether you have it or don't. And then it impacts the kicking game in a major way.
Yeah, agreed. Exactly right. And I think it changes your game plan all the way through as to how you want to play the game. Okay, you get locked into a really good one on Saturday. I mean... Usually five or six plays make a swing it one way or the other. Which five or six plays swung it for you?
Well, we were kicking off with a guy that we feel best about just kicking sky kicks with. Doesn't have the leg to kick it. And our normal kicker will be back in the Lehigh game. So we sky kicked it, and they made a good adjustment. They returned one beyond midfield. That gave them a short field. And then they threw a double pass, which went for about 40 yards. They scored on, but we had the lead in the fourth quarter, and we threw a pass to a tight end that would have converted for a first down. It was over his head. He tipped it, and usually in the tip drill, you lose that battle, and it landed in the safety's stomach. Even if he, if it would have hit him in the chest and it dropped to the ground, we're punting. And, you know, 2 weeks in a row where we've had the lead in the fourth quarter, could not protect it, could not defend it. And that's something that the way this league is structured, you're going to play in close games, and you better win the close games. And we had the opportunity to win, and we didn't finish it off, which our kids play hard. But you've got to be able to win the close games in order to give yourself a chance in the league.
There's always a series of, I don't know how many two-point plays you have, four or five, that you, that are the ones that you love. I didn't see the play, Joe, so what made this one a particular favorite that you wanted to go to, even though it didn't work, but what was it about that particular play that said, you know, that's one we want to use now?
It's one where we motion from 2x2 to 3x1. And you call it a rub route, you call it a pick route. I thought Lafayette did a very good job of covering that concept. You know, some people, you can evaluate all their film. You don't see one in a defended two-point play. So people have their specific defense that they run in two-point play, and it's usually that tight red zone. We call it the gold zone from the 11-yard line in. And obviously that's on the 3-yard line, so the field changes uniquely from a vertical standpoint, so it's a lot wider than it is deep, and you're trying to create seams, lateral seams within a defense. And we had an opening right away that, because it was contained well, we were sprinting, it was contained well, didn't have a chance to really set his feet to throw it, and then actually put it on the receiver's hands, but the ball got there as soon as the defender did, and you know, we don't see it as a drop, but we knew we had enough time to, even if we didn't get it, then you're playing for a field goal, and we actually had the ball again, playing to win, and we made a couple mistakes. One was a snap mistake where we snapped it too early and nobody was ready for it, and you know, changes were... Offensively, we are a team that we have to be stick efficient. And when we go behind the sticks with a tackle for a loss, it's hard for us to come back. I think Logan Bitterkofer played well. And tip ball interception, you know, it landed in the free safety's lap. It's free safety's not there. It lands on the ground, but it's an interception nonetheless. And then when Taron Earl got in, he did a very good job. He's really composed for a freshman, and you know, Logan suffered a lower leg injury. His status is uncertain right now, and I feel confident that if we go with Tarrant, obviously this being a bye week, it gives Logan some time to heal, but it also gives us some time to prepare Taron, and I think he'll do a good job. He's going to be a good quarterback.
When you can't get the running game going to a statistical standard that you need, what does that then do for the adjustments that you can make offensively? Because obviously running the ball, I don't care what league you're in, is going to be important.
It is, and I thought Lafayette did a very good job of what they did is they forced us to put the ball in the quarterback's hands. And just by loading the box, and they did a great job in terms of their gap control, gap efficiency. Even our misdirection, it seemed like they had somebody one up on us all the time. And what that did is it created some one-on-one opportunities. That's why I think Logan had one of his best yardage passing games. And I think he was 11 for 13 in the half and then 8 for 14 in the second half. And we hit some deep balls. When somebody's going to load the box, that's what you've got to be able to force people to do, defend the vertical part of the field. And we did that. But they were very effective at running the ball against us, and usually we are a better run defense than we were. Simeon Page was out. That impacts us, but it goes back to the next guy up. I thought Rick Mottram actually played pretty well.
Yep.
Just there were times we were out of gaps, and their backs were patient enough to slide, and then make a vertical cut. And I thought the other thing that Lafayette did was they broke out every deceptive play that they had in their arsenal, and all of them worked. Double pass, reverses. I credit John Garrett, he's a good coach, and they were ready to play us. Came down to the wire, as you know, like I said in this conversation, in this league, that's what it's going to be. You better win your close games.
You and I both know there are times as a football team and times in life where you have to outlast adversity. how much does this bye week, how much can this help to allow you to outlast a little bit of adversity and maybe set you up for a good November?
I think the way we're going to approach this will help us. Some might have the mindset that they're going to, okay, we're going out in full pads 3 days in a row. We can't do that.
No.
We're going to make tomorrow just like a Sunday practice. A lot of walkthrough, a lot of teaching periods, and then some 7-on-7 and some 2-minute drills. And then on Wednesday, we'll be a little bit more physical, and then Thursday will be another practice that we go in spiders. They're the, like, lacrosse shoulder pads.
Right.
So we'll lighten it up some, because the league is a league of attrition. And if you look at some of the teams in the league that, like Lehigh, I know that they're going through some of the same things we're going through in terms of the injury bug. The bye week comes, obviously we would have liked to have beaten Lafayette so that you put yourself in a position where who knows what happens in the league. But we have three important league games, and the bye week going into those three league games, we played 8 games in a row, and that's hard, because you combine that with 3.5 weeks of preseason. That's my math is 11.5 weeks. It's almost 3 months straight. And I credit our guys and I credit our coaches for they've done a good job and they've played hard. And this will refresh us. Obviously, we have 24-hour rule. I was guilty of letting it extend a little bit longer than that, but that one stung, and got to get right back on the horse, though.
All right. Well, Joe, I wish you nothing but the best. I know you got a lot of good work done during this week, and I look forward to talking to you next week as they get ready for Lehigh. Thanks so much for the time, as always, and for the insight. I always enjoy the conversation.
Was Kevin the one you saw on the broom, or was that Sean?
First of all, it was Kevin, but it was a really big broom.
Yeah, it was probably one of those vacuum cleaners with the attachment that the turbo powered. And thank you guys.
Right.
You guys have a great day.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. All right. We'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Tim Nevert, next half hour, the voice of the Red Sox here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Shamokin Dam Orchestra a little late there. Help me out with Troy's post on Facebook, because for some reason I can't quite get all of it. I think I've got the gist of it here.
Okay, I'll pull it up here as we speak.
And the gist of it was matching up well with Indiana's defensive front. I think the gist is, do I think Penn State should have run Miles Sanders more? Does that sound right? Does that make sense with what Troy? Because I want to make sure I get it right here. Because that's something. In fact, that is something, Troy, I mentioned in the broadcast, that I felt Penn State had found a rhythm with offensive line and running back.
Yeah, winning the matchup against the with their offensive line against Indiana's defensive line and run blocking on a day where the wind and drops were affecting the game. Yeah. Do you think Miles Sanders should have gotten more than 15 carries total?
Yeah, you know what, Troy? I think you've got a real point there. You do. And I felt, as I was watching the game, I even said to Jack at one point, This is off the air. I might have said this on the air, though, because we talked about it off, and I think I mentioned on about him getting more touches, because I felt that he was in a really good rhythm running the ball, and they were running the ball downhill. And you're right about the wind and the conditions. When we went down there before the game on the floor of the stadium, it was okay. Not great, but it was okay. But you could see by the middle of the second quarter, everything changed. And in the fourth quarter, you named the paper wrapper. It was swirling around there. So, yeah, you know, Troy, I think that's a really good point that you make. And it's something actually Jack and I had discussed because we were seeing things that you were seeing too.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.